Today, on an all-new episode of the Enneagram Journey.
I would like to thank all of you for being here with us on this fantastic, wonderful day. And I would like to raise my glass. Dale and I want to welcome you to our home with open arms.
Ugh. Get a room, Dad!
Oh, for Christ. Dale!
Well, as you all know, my youngest son, Derek, couldn't be here because of an important fishing trip. But my other son, Brennan, was going to be moving into his own place, but he was recently let go from his job at PetSmart, so he is going to be living with us.
I wasn't fired from my job. I was laid off. Well, you wouldn't know the difference. I didn't want salmon! I said it 4 times! Wedding is horse.
But you're a genius, Will. No one denies that. No one could possibly understand the depths of you. But you presume to know everything about me because you saw a painting of mine. You ripped my thin life apart. You're an orphan, right? You think I'd know the first thing about how hard your life has been, how you feel, who you are, because I read Oliver Twist? Does that encapsulate you?
If we become more focused as parents, more focused on what our kids are going to do and who they're going to marry, sometimes we lose track of how we're building the relationships we're already in and projecting on them what we actually want in our relationship instead of sharing our wants and needs with our current partner.
Hi, Joel and Suzanne.
Hi, my name is Art Wimberly.
Hi, my name is Lauren.
Hey, Suzanne, my name is Brad.
Hi, Suzanne, my name is Chelsea.
Hi, my name is Mark.
Hi. My name is Sarah.
Hi, my name is Nicole.
Hi, my name is Rachel.
And hi, my name is Joel. When you hear that high intro, you know it's another great episode of Q&A with Suzanne Stabile. Today's Q&A I think is especially fantastic because the Reverend Dr. Andy Stoker makes an appearance sharing some of his family systems wisdom with us all. Before we jump into the episode, first let me wish you a very happy holiday season from LTM, everyone here at the Micah Center and the Enneagram Journey podcast. We're going to be spending Saturday, December 9th at the Micah Center with the Enneagram Godmother teaching on the four mantras and the holidays. 1. Show up. 2. Pay attention. 3. Tell the truth. 4. Don't attach to the results. We're each going to struggle and have some successes with these mantras. I know coming out of Thanksgiving, I've already experienced plenty of it. Suzanne is going to give us some knowledge and tools to help us do better during what can be a very difficult season. You can join us virtually from anywhere in the world, and your registration includes access to rewatch the teaching if you can't join live, as well as a free audio download of the workshop. Visit lifeinthetrinityministry.com/4mantras, the number 4, mantras, or click on the link in the show notes for more info and to register. If you do miss the opportunity to join us live, no worries, you can still rent the teaching and get your free download at any time. Thank you for your support of Life in the Trinity Ministry and the Enneagram Journey podcast. We're excited for another year on the journey with you in 2024, and we would not be able to do it without you. LTM is a 501c3 nonprofit ministry, and your donations help us to keep workshops and resources affordable, as well as fund scholarships for the cohort program, teaching events, and the maintenance and upkeep of the Micah Center. You can find a link to contribute in the show notes and, of course, at lifeinthetrinityministry.com and theenneagramjourney.com. Now, let's get to today's episode. You good?
Yeah, I'm just trying to...
All right, yeah, you moved yourself out of your mic line.
Oh, okay. Well, I was trying to get where I wouldn't leave the mic and see you.
It's okay. Yeah, you rotated, but, you know, if you want to sit over there, you can sit over there.
I just don't want to do the thing that I do that... Oh, then. Yeah. Okay.
There we go.
Now I don't have to do the wrong thing to see you. Because we're getting these new things where this isn't going to matter. You
yep,
know?
That's right.
Yeah, get them overnighted.
That's why I said, you know, I showed Whitney on the via FaceTime. I was like, I'm the only Stabile that can do this right here. I'm the only one. Every other Stabile does this. Talks to people over here. Then talks right here. Then talks over here. And then... maybe sits back a little bit to talk here. And besides that, the hand motion stuff that you all do.
It's a lot, isn't it?
I'm the only Stabile that doesn't use my hands to talk. The Reverend, he's not so much a hand talker.
Oh, he's a hand talker, yeah. And when he does it, it's big. It's Italian big.
Okay. Well, good to know. Well, quick check-in. I'm going to reference something as I was pulling the questions that people asked.
Yeah?
I made a little note. I was like, ooh, I'll share a little something about this.
Okay.
But, you know, the Rangers are on to the American League Championship Series. So I'm doing really well.
The worst mistake on one of the TV stations last night reporting it.
What'd they do?
They put, tell me what the initials are supposed to be, American.
ALCS?
Uh-huh, and they had ALDS.
ALDS is what they just won.
Okay, so it was correct. Well, the other people in the station were trying to say it as many times with the C as they could, and I thought they were correct in the D, and then anyway.
Yep.
It was very exciting.
I had the wonderful chance and growing opportunity over this past week with Jolie. She has been asking all these questions about baseball. She's watching some of the games with me.
Sure.
And out of her love for me, she's asking me, she wants to learn what's going on.
Yeah.
And then there's me who's like really emotionally invested in this team. And she's asking like, what is a strike? And if they hit the ball, if it's a home run, does that count as a strike? And if they, so then I go over things. She's like, oh, okay, so. And I was very patient.
I bet you were.
And she even said to me at one point, maybe I wasn't patient enough, because she said to me at one point, I'm sorry I'm asking so many questions. I said, you don't have to apologize at all. I love that you're asking, answering. And just internally, I'd be like, she's being so sweet to you. Yeah. Don't be a jerk about this.
And yet, if it had been your mother. It just would have been a different response. That's all I'm saying. We don't have to chat about it. It just would not have been. Okay. She's being so sweet to me.
Yeah, I don't want to play it out of what that could have been. Well, that was my check-in. How are you?
I'm good. I'm working very diligently through ideas that I've had that are hanging on. You know, when I run out of room on my whiteboard for my ideas, I just get another whiteboard. I got them behind the doors. And I am absolutely sure, and have been for about 2 or 3 months, that it's time for me to return to serious journaling. You know, I do that for, I don't know, 5 years and take time off. And
we did a podcast interview with someone in the past 2 months, mm-hmm. and we talked about journaling. They had it was Enneagram 6.
Jasmine. Yeah.
Because going the deep crawl into her Instagram stories.
Yeah.
Found that. And you had talked about that you're going to get back to journaling.
Well, I am getting back to that. And that involves getting the post-its off of the whiteboards, along with my notes that have the things that I want to journal about. And then, you know, because I'm me, you know, the world does not know, but you know, that it has to be the right journal for the right time.
With the right pens. It's a combination.
Yeah, thing. It is a production. So that's what I've been working on, and I'm close to completing that. And we've been working with applications for the cohorts, and that's getting exciting. And I'm very excited about all the things happening in my world. Right. My children are good, and the grandchildren are good. And, you know, it's a sweet moment, and something will happen.
Awesome. Okay. Well, let's jump into today's Q&A.
Great.
We've got several that are the voicemail variety.
I love that you did that. I so like.
Other people do it too. I mean,
I know, but I love that you did it for us, is what I'm saying. Right. Because I can't, you know, I like to see people I'm talking to, but if I can hear them, that's half as good.
Mm-hmm. You like a phone call over a text?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, pull in question number one then from June.
Hi, Suzanne. My name is June, and I'm a 3 on the Enneagram. And I have a question. I completely understand the doing, the achieving, the goal setting of a 3, and that feels very much like myself. One thing, though, I have a question about. You talk about shape-shifting or trying to be what everybody else wants you to be, being different in different situations. But I guess for myself, I've always thought of it as a very positive thing, but I would use the words resilient and adaptable. I think back to situations in my life that maybe weren't of my choosing or weren't perfect, but I was always able to find something and make it work. And I know that that's what threes do, but being resilient and adaptable feels so much more genuine and positive to me. Whereas, shape-shifting or being different with different people just feels, doesn't feel so good. And I just wonder if you've ever thought about that or talked about that anywhere. I'd be glad to hear you say more about that. Thank you.
That's a great question, June. I've had a lot of conversations about that over the years, so I'm glad I get to have one with you. Threes are adaptable and resilient, but so are lots of other numbers. And the difference is that you can, a good idea to think of rather than shape-shifting, because you seem to have a little pushback with that, would be you are capable of being the poster child for any group that you are a part of that you're committed to. And that means that you can represent the values and the rules and the ways of being in the world of that group. But in order to do that, you have to leave out some parts of yourself that don't fit this prescribed group, but that perhaps fit two others that you're part of. And that's where shape-shifting comes in. And it's like anything else in the Enneagram, the best part of you is the worst part of you. And shape-shifting is one of your best gifts, and it's good for the world. And if used in less generous ways, it can be manipulative or self-serving.
We just went through session whatever in the Path Between Us study guide. And one of the charts and columns, its title is Five Terrific Qualities of Each Enneagram Number. And in going through it, I pointed out, I was like, now while we're looking at this, look at how it's labeled Five Terrific Qualities. Look how that each one can also be misused and abused and so on. And so, and everyone did, like, we looked through at, I started with sevens as the one facilitating, you know, put yourself out there. And I was like, there are times that I do these terrific qualities at the worst possible times, when it's not called for, when it's not the right time, when it's overdone, whatever.
Right.
And the same is for the other eight.
I think over the years, one of the things that you and I are aware of that we continue to learn is that if you had to say, what is the Enneagram about in a sentence, it is about balance in all things. I started thinking, oh, we have to balance thinking, feeling, and doing, and then we have to balance subtypes, but we have to balance everything. That is true for every number. And so threes tend to not like to hear the downside of the upside of their gifts. And no other number likes to hear that either. But that's the way of Enneagram work. That's it.
And I was like, you know what? I have my study guide here with me.
Yeah.
And so for the sake of continuing things, and for people that do have a Path Between a study guide, it's on page 31. For people who don't, oh my gosh, get one and find a friend and do it together. In fact, we'll make a promotion out of this for small groups because it's so good.
I can always see that little twinkle that comes right before the promotion.
So I'm going to read the seven. So it is, like I said, five terrific qualities. And so I'm going to read the five for sevens first, and then we'll jump over to threes.
Okay.
And then maybe we'll do twos here and look at both sides of this.
Yeah.
So sevens, five terrific qualities for sevens. One, can see the bright side of almost any situation. Two, are always looking forward to the next good or exciting thing. Three, don't get bogged down by worry or anxiety. Four, love learning and trying new things. Five, reframe any negative into a positive. I was like, okay, take those five terrific qualities, and there have absolutely been times that people have been furious at me for one of, for me doing one of those five things.
I might be one of those people.
Oh, you are. probably everyone who's met me. All right, so threes, five terrific qualities. One, are successful and always seem to have an interesting project going on. Two, devote tremendous energy to getting the job done. Three, are positive, charming, and confident. Four, recover promptly from challenges or setbacks. And five, dare to dream big and make those dreams come true. And those are five terrific qualities.
Yeah.
And?
Sometimes they run over people for that last one, to make the dream come true. Or they just dismiss people from their team who aren't on board with the dream. There's two sides to everything. And that applies here too. And to be clear, June, I'm not avoiding saying positive and lovely things about every number. And that's not our work. Our work is to recognize the things, ours, yours, mine, and everybody's, recognize the things that aren't the loveliest and aren't the healthiest, and do what we can with those.
I almost forgot to read.
I thought I'll keep talking and we'll get by this.
So we put the book down.
I did, and I thought, okay, baby.
Twos, five terrific qualities. One, have an apparently endless supply of love for others. Two, perceive what someone else is feeling even before that person is aware. Three, place a high priority on close relationships. Four, are inherently compassionate toward the suffering of others. And five, give generously of their time and money.
That's correct, but you have to give your time and money to the right people. I mean, I could go right up them. You know, I've given time away. I confess this often. I've given time to new people in my life when my husband, children, grandchildren want time too. I have to be very careful about not going after one more person to make me feel like I'm wanted.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
I feel like we did good with that one.
I thought we did too.
Yeah.
And June surely feels better now that we've gotten in the barrel with her.
I made a note here, and I wish I found the sheet of paper that I made a note that I'm referring to with this note. And the reason why I bring this up is the whole thing of we want to kind of just identify with what we get right and not where we miss the mark. And anagram work is where we're missing the mark. And a lot of times, like we just pointed out, it's going to be the same thing, just whether it's intentional or abused, I guess.
Right, right. Too much, not balanced, wrong people, all those things.
The note I wrote pretty much was like, the same thing can be applied to churches, is kind of what you said. You talked about churches getting around like the things, a couple of things that they get right, instead of kind of working on and growing right in where they're missing the mark.
Right, right.
That they just kind of ignore where they're missing the mark. They're ignoring some churches, not all churches, and for everyone it's going to be different. So,
well, I think we can talk about that from three perspectives. One, for both of us. When I taught in Houston, I talked for days, endless days. Like we just had one group after another, and I talked a lot. So I hope I'm pulling this out and that it's the thing. We all find our niche. And when you overplay your niche, you're always missing somebody. Whether it's you as a human, whether it's you as a church, or us at Life in the Trinity Ministries. And churches have begun to distance themselves from other churches by just focusing on the thing they do really well and not allowing change. Or they do just the opposite, and whoever comes through the doors will do and be whatever you want us to be if you'll just stay. I'm in churches a lot. And the story I hear over and over and over again is from young couples with children who say, we feel like we have to put on gear to visit a church because we're accosted by people who want us to come there because we're young, not because they have a charism that they own and live by, that if that fits us, we would like to be a part of this church. If you're not looking as a human for who's left out, where you're missing the mark, what you're not doing because you love doing this other thing, ultimately that'll get you. And the same is true of churches.
That's pretty much what I was like, oh my gosh, it's the same for people as it is for
church. Actually, you know, Dad and I are doing this program right now with churches. The exercise that we did with them on Sunday, we have a pilot group of four churches, was what number do you think your church is? And they all looked like, well, how would we know that? And the response is, I've spent a lot of time with you working on the 9 Enneagram numbers. You know what your number is. Is your church your number? Mm-hmm. Or no? Because it all transfers. And so I've been working on it this week to get ready for my next time that I teach them. And I've got, I think they all got their number right of the church that they go to. And I'm going to take characteristics next week. And I'm so glad you brought up what's in the study guide, because I'm going to use that, baby. And it'll be very helpful to them. And, you know, I've written a word or two since then. I have no idea what's in the study guide.
Got to get a refresher.
Yeah.
Treat churches like Joey and Billy talk about young children. Even if you can't get the number right, you can get their stance.
That's
you
right.
can get your church's stance.
Yeah, you can get close enough.
Yeah.
Another thing I think that we might want to say about churches and other organizations, while you have to be inclusive, you can't just start new stuff all the time, and you can't let people come in and say, oh, I wanted this church to be this, and then say, well, we can be that. You have to have your core beliefs that you're going to stick to, and then how you represent those or live them out could be up for grabs, but not every other minute. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me a little bit of our talk with Jason Miller.
Yeah.
He's an Enneagram 5 who planted a church in South Bend area. We kind of asked about churches. My question for you, how often do churches take on the personality of their senior leadership, whether it's an individual pastor or?
In my experience, that happens a high percentage of the time with pastors who plant churches. But not somebody going in, like in our denomination, where we are moved by the bishop. Personality of the church doesn't change, which is one of the reasons the work I'm trying to do right now in churches is to say, you can't, if your orientation to time as a church is the past, stop looking for a pastor whose orientation to the time is the future. You're skipping a step, and you will not like each other.
Or you got to work on that relationship.
Exactly.
It can't be.
By putting somebody whose orientation to time is the present moment in between as an interim pastor.
All right. Our next question is from Christina.
Hi, Suzanne. My name is Christina. And I first want to just thank you for all your insight and wisdom. It has really made a huge difference in my life. I am a very social 3, and I know that you are always saying that we need a spiritual director and a therapist. Spiritual direction is not difficult for me. I have a person that helps me with that, but therapy tends to be a struggle. And here's what happens. Usually when I go to a therapist, they tend to veer it off. And at the end of the hour, I think that's not what I wanted to talk about. That's not what I need to work through. And after about 3 or 4 sessions, it just feels like a huge waste of time to me because it seems like this is not what I want. In the past, some of the best therapy sessions I've had is when I journal and then we've talked about what I've journaled. However, I've tried to convey that and it turns into messiness. And I don't know if I'm not expressing my needs to them or how I need to have therapy. And so do I keep searching for a therapist that'll work with me or how do I convey my needs that so that therapy is productive for me and it just doesn't feel like a waste of time? So I just appreciate any insight or wisdom in that. And if you could help this 3 girl out, I'd surely be appreciative. Thanks and have a great day.
Joel and I are both looking at each other because we have had our own experience with our therapist not talking about what we wanted to talk about. That's a thing. So here are some offerings, and you just take what works and gently just let the rest fall away. I know that you are probably aware that you are one of the aggressive numbers on the Enneagram, And that means that you have a plan for the future and you want the outcome to be well coordinated with your plan. And therapy generally doesn't work like that. And when it does, then that means that you're in control and not the therapist. So I would start with that. The second thing I would say is you don't have to have an Enneagram-informed therapist, but you will need to inform your therapist about your Enneagram work. And you need to recognize that you will need to have someone who's stronger than you are. But that doesn't mean that they're bigger in the room or that they have more to say. It doesn't mean that. And so what I'd like for you to think about is if you're using journaling to go into therapy because that's what you want to talk about, and the professional therapist, as you get into that, believes that there's something else there that it might be good for you to talk about, you, in order to benefit from therapy in the ways that most people do, might not work for you. You need to follow the therapist rather than having the therapist follow your agenda. I would suggest at this point that you take a break. You're frustrated and it isn't being helpful to you right now. So take a 3-4 month break and then maybe try with a new therapist and have a long conversation with the therapist before you agree to move forward with the relationship. And tell them who you are and what your problems have been and in relationship to your previous therapist, and ask what their solutions for that would be. There have been a lot of times when I've gone into therapy with what I wanted to talk about, and that just didn't make the day. And very few times when what did end up happening was not what was best for me.
And not every therapy session is a home run.
No. And that's part of the process too. An important part of the process, I think.
I got to go back and watch. I think I caught the tail end of it recently, so that's why it's on my mind. Good Will Hunting.
Oh, yeah.
And Robin Williams' movie. Character, yeah. With Matt Damon's character. Oh, and man. How it starts versus how it ends. Yeah. And their time together is different every time. And I know it's a fictional screenplay movie, but...
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing I'm going to say with an open heart and a little bit of trepidation is I recommend that when threes first start therapy, they take someone with them for the first few appointments who knows them well. Because it's a waste of time to go to therapy if you don't bring your real self.
What makes me think of is... yours and Russ Hudson's and whoever else, that the deceit is just so hard to teach people, Enneagram-wise, about threes.
Yeah.
And that it's not deceiving others, it's self-deceit. Right. And it's not intentional, it's just is. And it's kind of, and so I was just going to say, and so it's the, I feel like you're saying the point of bringing someone with you is to help as a stopgap from the self-deceit. So that it's an honest conversation happening in the room. And when you're saying it's like, there's no point in going if you're not going to be honest.
Yeah.
And it's the same as like somebody in AA going and drinking. Yeah. While, you know, just what
are you doing? And the other thing I think is true about that in terms of bringing somebody and deceit, I'm really glad you brought that up, is that threes tend to go to therapy wanting to be whatever the therapist thinks they are or thinks they should be. And I would encourage you to watch for that in yourself. Although it doesn't sound like that's happening, it could be. Yeah. And it's okay if you don't have a therapist for a while. It's okay. And it's okay if people never have a therapist. And it's best if they do. And I would encourage you, since spiritual direction's going well for you, to decide what it is you expect to get from each one and how they're different.
Our next question is from Rachel.
Hi, guys. My name's Rachel. I am in Washington State. I am just
wanted to ask a question about relation to time and memories. Joel, as a seven, has talked about how he doesn't remember family gatherings or, you know, past events in the same way as they might have actually happened, or in the same way as other people remember them. And I was curious if threes also have that in common. I am a three, and I do remember past events, but I have a hard time. It's the whole three thing about not being able to be entirely present at an event. And I sort of relate to that as sevens do. And I just wanted your opinion on that. If that inability to remember past events also carries over to eights and threes as kind of the aggressive stance, or what your thoughts were on that. So thanks so much for all you guys do.
Hey, Rachel.
I'm sure I'll be back.
Hey, Rachel, you're welcome. Eights, not so much, but threes and sevens, yes. Eights kind of take things as they are, but threes and sevens take things as they could be. And sevens reframe, but threes restructure. And the difference in the two is that restructuring is, yeah, I don't want to think about that or that, so I'm going to take this conversation and remember this part. Whereas sevens are just making the boring or negative parts positive, and they're doing that in real time, and you are thinking, yeah, I don't want to really think about that, or that would have been so much better if we'd gone this way with that conversation. And then that's what you do in your head. So it's different, and it happens, and not for eights.
The orientation time for all three being the future, I can see, though, it's different when the focus is out in front of you for each number, that things do get left behind for all three, and things do get lost. To give it a seven example that I've got just top of mind, it happened last night, and Whitney found it quite amusing. And I thought I was like in my feelings here.
I'm so looking forward to being amused.
Last night, so as I mentioned earlier in this recording, the Texas Rangers are on to the American League Championship Series. And I was just so happy last night.
I also would like to add to that. You held out for them the entire time. Oh, yeah. I would say, I'm so sorry. And you would say, nope, you just wait. You wait. They're coming.
So I was just I was so happy last night. So happy. And then I got to thinking about, you know, we've got two more. We've got the next round, which we're probably going to play the Astros. And right now the Astros really have our number. And then the World Series, which we haven't won, and these things. And I immediately kind of got sad because I thought about like in the past when we lost in the World Series and we lost to Toronto. And then I looked at Whitney. I was like, oh no.
Like, it could happen.
The odds are that statistically, odds are this feeling is waiting for me in the future that I'm going to be sad again.
I love that.
And I told her, I was like, I'd rather this was like a girlfriend or something. I can leave a girlfriend, but like that's easy for me to leave. But the Rangers are my sports soulmate. And she goes, what'd you just say?
What are you talking about?
And I was like, so I've got to stick this thing out to.
Yeah.
And in that, like, I forget. I can tell you outside of, for your Ranger fans and sports fans, and I don't think Nelly Cruz is a listener of the Anagram Journey, but if he is, ugh. I remember him not catching that ball. But I remember being so excited when we made the World Series the first time.
Yeah.
I don't remember the losses to the Giants.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. That's that kind of reframe of the moment for me. Yeah. And looking back, I remember that Joey talked about with Sam one time coming home from a soccer game, and he had to play goalie for some reason, I think.
Yeah.
And he gave up a bunch of goals.
Yeah.
And she was trying to talk to him about that, and he was like, I don't even remember giving up those goals.
Yeah, I don't remember goals I don't save. Yeah. I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is a little nuanced. See what you think about this. All three of you believe that you can create a future.
And are focused on creating the future.
Yes, three, sevens, and eights. And you're doing that in different ways. Yours is anticipating the pleasure and then reframing things that don't meet your anticipation. But threes are anticipating the success. And eights are problem solving in the future so that if a problem happens, they already have an idea for how to fix it. And those are three completely different ways of being in the future in your head while you're in the present moment.
I learned a new word recently.
What is it?
Nicodonia. Nikhedonia. So I might be pronouncing it wrong. Is a word that means the pleasure that comes from anticipating success.
That's a three thing right there. That's it. Which isn't the same thing as your anticipation. You're anticipating fun, and I'm going to love the room when I get it this way, and this new recipe I have is going to be fabulous.
Anticipating experience.
Yes, yes.
And the experience is going to be enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't it be?
But it's experiential. It's not the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All right. The next question is from Sarah, who's a nine.
Hello, Suzanne and Joel. This is Sarah. Thank you so much for the work that you do. I would really appreciate if you could talk about finding a sense of direction and purpose in life, particularly for Enneagram 9s. I feel like I've spent most of my life just kind of filling the gaps or doing what other people think is a good idea. So I've been working on the smaller scale stuff of working out what I need to do on a day-to-day basis and actually doing it, and also bringing more of myself to encounters with other people, which is very difficult for me. But I really long to find my place in the larger world, to actually give what I have to offer and be of service rather than just hiding and telling myself it doesn't matter anyway. So should I just carry on with the smaller stuff and something will hopefully eventually kind of grow out of that? Or do you have any other specific suggestions or practices that would be helpful? Thank you so much.
Hi, Sarah. What a courageous, vulnerable question. I'll see how I can help, and Joel, I hope, will chime in and maybe we can make some good suggestions that you can move forward with a bit. Our sister and daughter, Joey, our oldest, is married to a nine, and he has discovered that the way he can get his work done and get out into the world with what's left over in terms of energy because he got his work done is by having a baseline that he operates from every day. And the things on the baseline just have to be done, and they have to be done in order and in a timely fashion, and that frees up the energy for all the other things that he knows he has to do and the other things that might come. And I've been using that since I learned it from him with other nines, and it is proving to be very helpful. So that means you start your day with things you're going to do that you're going to do every day, and you're going to do them in a timely fashion, and that establishes your routine. I'm guessing that you're an introverted nine, and that makes it a little more difficult to get in the world and build relationships. One of the things I would encourage you to do after that is create a group to study the Enneagram with you. You could invite five people from your life or from an organization that you're part of to do Enneagram curriculum with you. And anybody can lead the curriculum. So you could be the leader and pull people together who are talking about the things you obviously want to talk about and who are building community with one another. I am not a professional, and I'm saying this with hope for you and no prescription. And that is, I wonder if you have a therapist. And if not, I would really encourage you to get one. You sound like you need help getting started with who you know you are, and you want to share and become more of who you are in the world. And that's hard to do for an introverted nine, period. It's just hard. And it's hard for a nine, introverted or extroverted, if they don't share the things that you shared with us and ask somebody to help hold their feet to the fire so they get out there and do the things that you're saying you want to do. And I'm supportive of you starting small. But if one of the three things you're doing to start small isn't working and it's not necessary, then pick a different one. Don't just hang with that.
Intentionality is hard too.
It's really hard.
I would think it's hard for everyone. Yeah. But you talk about sometimes how it's easier to see some people's repressed centers than others. And I wonder if because Nine's repressed center is doing that, is especially for Nine to see it, like she's got the awareness of like, oh my gosh, like how to get that thing going.
Yeah. And distractions. You have to add easily distracted to repressed doing while knowing what needs to be done. She's clear about what needs to be done. It's a hard and lovely number to be.
I've got the funniest example, or it's funny to me. It just happened the other day. Nine in our small group, one of the small groups that's going right now, shared, I forget what the context was, but that he was laying there and his mouthpiece was next to the bed. And he was like, I need to put that away. That needs to be put away. And then he said that to himself. Then he said, it'll be all right. You know, somebody else will get it, whatever. And then the dog ate the mouthpiece.
Yep.
I was like, that's such a Nine story. It is. Of like, that I see the mouthpiece that needs to be put away.
Yeah, and somebody should do it.
Somebody should do it. I'm going to go to sleep.
The dog did. That's great.
All right. We've got a question from another Nine. Or maybe not from a Nine. Scratch that. But involves a Nine in the subject line. From Sally. My daughter of 5 needs to have a difficult conversation with her 9 father about their currently estranged relationship. Any advice for my daughter to be heard and hopefully to reconcile the relationship? Background. The relationship seemed good, regular communication and interaction, until 7 months ago when her father started dating a new girlfriend. There was a blow-up involving all of us, including the girlfriend, at a gathering a few months back, and her father has not reached out since then other than when he needed something. No effort on his part or the girlfriend's part has been made to amend that blow-up. My daughter is getting married in February and has expressed to her father she does not feel comfortable with the girlfriend being at the wedding. Knowing this, he still seems to plan to bring the girlfriend. Thank you for any suggestions.
You cannot do anything. You can't do anything that will affect the relationship between your daughter and her father, or your daughter and the girlfriend.
I know. I wish Andy was here.
I do too. All you can do is work on your relationship with the daughter and advise her in ways that you believe are really honest and true, maybe risking conflict, as to how she might be able to approach her father effectively. But you can't do anything about your daughter and her father's relationship. You can only do something about your relationship with your daughter and your relationship with her father. And when I am told that, it just makes me unhappy. And I figure I've just made you unhappy. And yet it's true.
We're going to roll the dice on something here.
Okay.
All right. So for you, the listeners, in the moment, I called Andy. I was like, man, I think I've got his phone number laying around here. He called and he screened me. He looked at it and put it back down. But now he's here in the room. He's actually at the Micah Center with Suzanne. This is a little after their lunch break for the final meeting of the Family Systems cohort of 2023. And I was like, let's take advantage of this. You're here.
Yeah.
Give this a listen and we would love your input and your feedback.
Yeah, yeah. So this is it's an interesting scenario here because I know you all were talking about 9s and 5s, but this is the Stoker core principle of family systems theory, which is exactly what Suzanne was talking about. We are entering into a triangle in this example. There is dad, mom, and daughter. And this is what I call the primitive triangle. It's the base level, the fundamental understanding of when we were children, we had biological mom, biological dad, biological mom, biological dad, and we learned how to relate to those two. When we learned how to relate to them, it imprinted on us how we were going to relate oftentimes to those specific gender identities throughout our lives. So family systems theory isn't just about how I'm relating to my family of origin or family of choice. It's really how we relate to relationships. So if we learned how to relate to someone who's distanced from us or cut off from us, we have really amazing boundaries that separate us. If we learn to be enmeshed or yoked with someone else, then we're going to take that into our adult relationships. In Suzanne's response, she's talking about what is affectionately called the seventh law of emotional triangles. The seventh law of emotional triangles maintains you cannot affect the relationship to the one you are related to. That is, as a child, this daughter can only relate to her father and her mother. I think I got the genders right, didn't I?
Yes.
Okay, yes. Good. So relating to father and mother, she cannot affect the relationship of her father and her mother, how they relate to one another. So if that's the case, what do you do in this situation? The person in the triangle that is related to the others, when they're in conflict, the advice is you draw close to that person. And when you draw close to that person, you are able to share life better. The idea in family systems theory is if you distance yourself from someone, then you're just allowing the relationship to be even further away from what you can, quote unquote, control. We all know that the C word.
The illusion.
The illusion of control. That's exactly right. And family systems theory teaches that control is, you're exactly right, is simply an illusion. What Murray Bowen talks about, what Edwin Friedman talks about, what my coach Elaine Boomer talks about, is you have to move close to the one you're conflicted with. When you move close to the one you're conflicted with, in this scenario, I'll say if you're in an abusive relationship, if there's a violent relationship, do not move close. Let me give that caveat. But in this situation about a wedding, about so on and so forth, move closely to those to whom you're related so that they are clear about how you're investing in their relationships with you. By showing them that, maybe, just maybe, there is some empathy that is planted in each one of them, that when they see one another, they're taking your side on things, if you will. They understand you a little bit better. They can imagine walking in your shoes.
Well, listeners, so like I said, we're recording this well after the original recording. And in editing, I've already heard, gone back and listened to what I said, not tongue-in-cheek, but very tongue-in-cheek, where I was like, man, just, you know, invite the dad's girlfriend to be a bridesmaid, like really over-involve her and see if that.
Well, I mean,
and so now that you're saying me, I'm like, maybe I was onto something here.
Well, I mean, that's the funny thing is, like, family systems theory sometimes calls you to unconventional things, like moving toward conflict. That was the hardest thing for me, Joel. I don't know what conflict is like for you, but I have a really hard time moving toward conflict.
Oh, yeah. I automatically go to ignore it or move away from.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm just so blind to it anyway.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
So I might not even know it's there.
So it's become like I've elevated it to spiritual practice. I'm moving toward the flame. I am like the moth. I am seeking not to be burned, but just to feel that warmth of conflict. Because what happens is when I come close to conflict, it agitates in me more creativity and more innovation. So yeah, sometimes family systems theory does have you doing weird things. Now, yeah, tongue in cheek, if you have her like serving punch or something, that is not what you want her
you
doing.
You have not moved toward, you've created, maybe not moved towards.
But what does it look like for a relationship to be built? What does it look like for there to be some kind of coffee connection or just the two of them coming together to break bread, to share life together outside of the male figure that's in that triangle?
One of the things that we haven't touched on yet, and we don't have enough information to really know.
Yeah.
We have what we have. But one of the things that I love hearing y'all talk about, you and Suzanne, is when we're older, just kind of that, the easiness to fall back into our dynamics from childhood.
Yes.
And it's like, she's not a child. She's about to get married. Like, this is no longer. Oh, yeah. And so, and it sounds like the same is true, or correct me if I'm wrong, that same is true from the parental side of having to wrap our head around, this isn't my little girl anymore.
Yep.
This is an ex-husband now, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. And our triangle is not the triangle from 20 years ago, whatever.
Correct. Correct. That's the worst news of family systems. You know, family systems and Enneagram cohort, the first words out of my mouth are, we're in January and will be this coming February, are these: we will not be friends this weekend, because I'm going to be telling you that everything you're doing now has been automatic to you, that has been out of your control since birth. And so, of course, people push back because, well, I've done all this Enneagram work, or I've been in therapy for years, or whatever else. And yet, if you don't have this additional layer of what your conditioning is on how you actually interacted with biological parents, cutoff, enmeshment, or you had, you know, a healthy, regulated relationship, whatever it was, you're bringing that into all of your relationships. Most especially, you're bringing that into your family of choice, your spouse, your partner, husband, wife, whomever it is. You're bringing all of that conditioning into that relationship. And most conflict is about our childhood patterns showing up in adult bodies. And, you know, Megan and I have been married 25 years. I've been studying systems theory for a little over 20. I've been in therapy for that long. Enneagram blew my mind. So I feel like I'm trained up. Like I've got more wallpaper that are called degrees on my wall. And every day, every single day, no matter how much lived experience, no matter how much education, I'm convinced that I am still caught in the system of my family of origin, in the ways that they condition me to react to and respond to all kinds of stimuli. And it's a daily practice. Who am I really? That is the quintessential question that everybody starts with. And this is why I think what you're doing, Joel, what Suzanne does at Life in the Trinity Ministry, what I'm hopefully offering to groups is a little bit more wisdom and focus, so that we can continue to grow together and be more whole as we connect with our most intimate neighbors and strangers alike on a daily basis.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much, and look forward to talking about this again in the future. You've got two boys that you have to marry off. So we'll save that for, I don't know, a 2026 podcast, 2027.
Man, yeah, you know, if I can get I'm still working on my marriage. Let's yeah. Let's be clear. We're hopeful. I mean, not to belabor this point. I know you're we're to a round off here. We're finishing the floor routine, but you know, that's it. if we become more focused as parents, more focused on what our kids are going to do and who they're going to marry, sometimes we lose track of how we're building the relationships we're already in and projecting on them what we actually want in our relationship instead of sharing our wants and needs with our current partner. And my sweet kids have gotten way more from me about my own conditioning. I hope that I'm not giving them anything else into their adulthood as they choose their partners for life.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Andy.
Joel, thanks. Thanks for all you do.
Weddings are tough. So aside from, I'd be curious how, you know, everybody wants reconciliation anyway amongst the people that they love or are in relationship with. But when you add a upcoming wedding to it, that's difficult. And weddings are just, not everyone is, it's not a fairy tale day.
Funerals and weddings, people behave the worst. And that's Dad's experience in ministry for 52 years now, is that's what happens. And this is what happens in those circumstances. And my advice, and this is not Enneagram wisdom, this is Suzanne Stabile's advice. It would be best if your daughter doesn't try to control who her father brings to her wedding or who ever else comes to the wedding. That's outside her purview. What happens in situations like this is you end up focused on the wrong things, and then the things that you will look back on and wish you had focused on, you missed.
I don't know if I've ever heard of the father of the bride not having a plus one. Is that
right?
Is that an option? Maybe that's the route we go here. Sorry, we didn't order you the salmon. We didn't get you a second plate.
Well, it's just more control than is going to be effective. And when you, another thing I would say about this, because the father's a nine, right?
Daughter five, father nine.
Yep. Another thing I would say about nines is don't forget they're the most stubborn number on the Enneagram. And when you try to push them to do things your way, they're not going to. They just dig in.
I'm a seven, so I'm, you know, this is a safe space to go ahead and say the ridiculous things that pop in my head.
Like what?
Go ahead and just give the father's girlfriend like way too much to do on that day. Like involve her. Now she's a bridesmaid.
Yeah.
And see how this plays out.
Yeah, I don't think that'd be good. Just I'm not in favor of that plan.
Overly involved.
That you think of how people could be how you could be further entertained by the situation.
That reminds me, oh my goodness, we've told it. I'll go find which podcast it was. It was in the one in Houston, live one that we did in Houston, where Dad told the story of the funeral with the guns going off They were trying to pull the body out of the casket to take it back to Mexico.
Oh, no, he was going
to
carry the casket.
The casket. Oh, and just
to
all
Mexico.
The...
It was crazy.
And then
remember the
something
hearse
else was going
turn
on?
Off the motor on the hearse.
So it's running the entire time.
That was his last funeral in the Catholic Church. As a priest.
Oh, man.
And then there are all the stories in his years as a Methodist pastor.
Yeah. So, yeah, don't, you know, definitely go with Suzanne's advice here.
Yeah.
But if you do mind, you know, please call back and let me know how that went. All right, we got a question from Matt. A two struggle with disappointment and anger. Hello, Suzanne and Joel. I'm writing to you because I'm a 40-year-old two in need of some understanding. I'm a two who has often struggled with what to do when I feel angry and when I feel disappointed. I don't like to feel those emotions, and I know that the work for a two is to think instead of do. What does productive thinking look like for a two? And people have asked that question. You know, questions get asked over, but with that context, what does productive thinking look like for a two?
It involves logic. So if we take the whole context... And I hate to give you this, Joel Stabile. I'm going to hand you one, and I don't really want to, but I'm doing it because I'm a two, and I want to help my fellow two. When you're disappointed, logic will handle a lot of it. When you're hurt and angry, logic will handle a lot of it. But we don't have access to logic. I mean, that's just a fact. That's an Enneagram reality. And you have to bring up thinking then, logical thinking. Did that person want to hurt my feelings? Did that person want to leave me out? Is this going this way because I'm terrible? All that's at play. Now I'm going to give you another level that's deeper and more important. And the deeper, more important level is it occurring when you ask for something and don't get it? Because that is the most difficult space for twos, is to find all that it takes to ask for something that they either want or need with the fear that they're not going to get it and then not get it. And it's devastating. And I don't have that happen often in my life, but those are things I take to therapy to say, why is this devastating? It made me so sad, but why? And my anger, honestly, as a two, Joel Stabile, I don't want to hear this again either, is a third of the time just histrionic. I just get into it and the emotions get bigger than me and I get into the emotions. And then I'm, as Joel said to me in high school, you're just so over the top right now, Mom. And honestly, sometimes we are just over the top. And for some numbers, it's laughable. And for other numbers, it's off-putting. And for other numbers, they just don't know what to do with it. Nor do we. And because we're verbal processors, we can't just shut up.
Are there two sides of this also where it's not just the bringing up the thinking, but also managing the feeling?
Yeah.
So what the reason why I ask is there have been times with both you and other individuals. So I'm not, you know, you're the closest relationship with the two that I have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with Whitney being a one, let's include that as far as the bringing up the thinking. There'll be times that y'all separately are worked up about something. Yeah. You're angry about something. You're hurt by something. And I'll be like, that you're never going to see that human being again in your life.
Right. Why do you care?
Like that, the relation, it's not, and that's the combination of the two. It's thinking about that as well as managing the, I think I did the wrong hands there, as well as managing the feelings. It's, okay, what is this relationship? And
what does it mean to me?
Yeah, that this person feels this way about me, or that they did this, or.
And honestly, one of the hard things I have to ask myself is, do you really think you're this important in this equation, Suzanne? Because I think I matter way more than I do in a situation. And I think they're not even thinking about me. This doesn't have anything to do with me.
Who is it that said only 1/7 billionth of this is about you?
1/8 billionth of this. 1/8 billionth
of this is about you. Yeah. That's the questions I got.
Yeah, I have a couple of thoughts. I'm so often asked what an Enneagram solution is to a problem. And so often I feel like the Enneagram has something to offer. Not a solution, but something to offer. There's an awful lot happening in the world right now that nine numbers are going to respond to differently. And my thought for myself is that I'm not going to focus on how anybody else is responding. Instead, I'm going to try to focus on the pain, fear, things that I'm responding to that are way beyond my purview in the world. I don't very often turn to Dad after morning prayers or during morning coffee or any other time during the day and say, part of me is very sad that our children and grandchildren are being exposed to some of the things that are happening around the globe. Generally, I just think all of you are well-equipped and you got great tools and we work hard at being good as a family, all of us, out in the world. And I have decided today that I'm going to focus on the problem and not how other people are focusing on the problem. And I'm going to do what's mine to do. And that's it for me. And I think that might be good for other folks too.
It sucks that these things are happening in the world.
Yeah, it does.
And with that being said, and there's an age for everything as far as how much you share, how much you talk to the kids about
right.
certain things. And they need to know that it's happening.
Yeah.
I forget, you know, it was a meme or an Instagram post or something like that. I don't know. A young black girl who in somewhere in the South finally went to, you know, had to be the one to go to the school and was yes. the first one.
Yes. In Arkansas.
And lived through that.
Yep.
And, you know, the post said, if she can actually do it.
Yes.
Your kids can learn about it.
Absolutely.
And so when you said, you know, for our kids to be exposed to what's happening, mm-hmm. it's like it's not happening to them though.
No, it isn't.
And so I'm grateful for that. However, they need to know what's happening to the other children around the world and people yeah. around the world.
To ultimately do whatever is theirs to do to be part of the solution. And a lot of the pain that is in the world right now skipped my generation. I had my own. We had a mess in the 60s. And I think every generation has its opportunity to learn from what's happening in the world. And some people learn and some people just don't pay attention and all those things. But social media has changed all of that. And one of the reasons I'm talking to Dad about it is because our grandchildren the older ones have access to everything I have access to in terms of social media.
Probably more.
Yeah. For sure more. And it's just a different day. And I'd like for everybody in the LTM community to be aware and to be hopeful and kind when you can.
Right on. Well, thank you for your time today. And thank you all for the questions. And the more people that leave questions, the more, a lot of them have already been answered. So if somebody asks a question about fours and bringing up doing, man, we just did it on Q&A like 2 months ago.
Right.
So we can't answer that one here. But volume shooting, the more questions that come in, the more new questions we get to answer.
Yeah.
And you can find that at Life. You can find that at theanagramjourney.com. Interact and join in the conversation.
Yeah. It's a good day, Jules, to be you.
Thank you. Thank you again. Thank you all again.